Welcome to Our Voices, Our Community. Each week, we focus on issues that are important to you and our community. We discuss an array of issues in Roanoke and the New River Valley, from social to political to economics, but also arts and culture and so much more. Our goal is to merge local with state and national issues that affect our lives in Southwest Virginia. So on today's episode, we're going to talk about several things. We're going to talk about protesting and the events that took place throughout the country, but specifically here in Roanoke. We're also going to talk a little bit about Governor Northam's mandate to take down the Confederate statues. And so I'm excited to be here today. The voice you hear is not Robert Jeffries, but it is Karen Jones. I'll be our host and moderator today. And joining me are Will Solari and Catherine Stromberg. How are you guys doing today?
Excellent.
Hanging in there.
Yeah, it's been a rough couple of weeks, huh?
Yeah, it's amazing what a difference a week can make since we last kind of got together and talked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Revealing. It's been a revealing week.
You know, always. One of the things for me, I'm always like, I thought I had seen the worst, yet I have not. Like it gets worse and worse and worse. But hopefully there's going to be, you know, some sunshine at the end of all of this, and some much needed changes are going to happen. We'll be able to tear down those walls that are kind of keeping us from being who it is that we truly want to be. So
I know this is they're putting up walls right in DC right now. We got the wall around the White House wall.
Yeah. Wall around the White House. We've got people, you know, military on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Places of leadership and peace and not good. So let's talk about all across the country and in Virginia, we've had protests and rallies that have taken place in response to the murder of George Floyd, which represents a treatment that Black and Brown people receive at the hands of police. And so let's talk about what's our call, what's our response. We've seen the protests across the country, but I want to talk a little bit about what we saw here in Roanoke this past week. On Saturday, there was a peaceful rally that was organized by some of our local advocates, Bernadette, and y'all have to forgive me because I just forgot her last name. So if she's listening, I'm sorry. Jordan Bell and some other folks. And I was there, and it was really just a great show of community. I was impressed. Bernadette, Brenda Hill, who serves as the branch president of the NAACP, spoke. Jordan Bell, and they all had very specific calls to actions about what we need to do about here as a community. And then they decided to march to the police station. And that, I believe, is where we should begin. What do y'all think?
Yes. I mean, I can tell you I was not there, but I can tell you the accounts that I have gathered variously from people who were. And I can say that, you know, as people were marching, apparently they marched and, you know, were marching. They met some police cars that kind of served somewhat as a barrier. But they weren't really, you know, to my knowledge, they weren't really told at that barrier, that first barrier, to stop, that they weren't allowed to pass. And like, it kind of like, it was the first set of cars were kind of like they were blocking the road. But it wasn't really clear that they were meant to block the people. And certainly the message was not in any way communicated to the people at either set of like police car barriers that there was any indication or intention that those barriers were meant to stop the march. And so the marchers came to those and just walked through. And so they came to this first set of police cars and walked through. And they came to the second set of police cars and walked through, because literally no one said you can't, to my knowledge. So, you know, that is my understanding of the march. And then, you know, there was no attempt to communicate that these were barriers meant to stop you. And then they got to, you know, closer to the police stations, the actual block the police station is on. And there were some barriers that were like some like sticks that are kind of set down into the road, I guess, barriers, and maybe a police car, and more people, you know, and they had actual, you know, the cops were out there kind of more on a bit of a riot gear setting with batons, like large sticks, and with pepper spray. And you know, there was sort of, they were stopped, you know, they were kind of, there was still, to my knowledge, once again, there was still no clear orders being given out. Like, there was a physical indication that they weren't supposed to pass, but there was no, there was nobody on the police side, to my knowledge, with a loud, you know, saying, hey, you know, here, we're going to stop you here. We need you to stop at this point. Like, there was nobody giving a clear police order, to my knowledge, in a loud voice where everybody could hear.
Right.
And plus, we've instilled confusion, right? The first two barriers, you know, the police, from what I've heard of police accounts, were meant, that they were meant by the police, that they were supposed to be a stoppage, but the police did not enforce a stoppage. And so when you let something become something that was a barrier that you, like, one side sees as a barrier and the other side sees as like, just, oh, we're stopping traffic, you know, for you, the marchers. Then when you come to the third barrier, you think that it is the same as the other two, because that is what you have been led to believe by the first two barriers.
Uh-huh.
So this utter failure to communicate, and, you know, and at that point, you know, there's video, you know, that's pretty clear on Facebook of a guy with his hands up in the air, a black guy with his hands up in the air, and he gets shoved back, you know, he steps forward and gets shoved back by one guy with a baton, and then he gets pepper sprayed, and the people around him get pepper sprayed, you know, and to me, that was the first, that was just a real failure. Like, first off, like, you know, there was nothing unpeaceful about that,
right.
You know, standing there with your hands up in the air. You know, there's a real failure to communicate, in my opinion, on the side of the police, that they're not communicating. You know, I've seen the police now, you know, the chief of police blamed the marchers for a failure to communicate. But,
well, so kind of, you know, a couple of things with that. I think that one, the police presence, in full gear does not, I think, portray a sense of community or whatever it is that it was that they were trying to do. The march, as I understand it, was spontaneous. It was something that was decided at the rally. And so for them to be out in such full force like that, without having been at the rally to understand the context, right? I think it would have been much different as if the rally was not peaceful, if it had riled people up, like, to this point of anger. I think that would have been one thing, but that wasn't the flavor of the event, right?
Right.
And so thinking about how, as a community, what we saw, because I'll tell you guys, as I was leaving to head back to Christiansburg, they had both of the exits cut off, so you couldn't get off the exits on either side of 581 to go to downtown, which I found to be very odd, because I was like, you know, what is this? But I think there was an overreaction and overreach. I know since Saturday, there have been a lot of meetings and discussions, and the community is rallying to say, hey, how do we fix this? What's the issue? But then it went more left, I think, at Walmart, right? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't really know what. So Walmart, to me, is a completely separate and very much more confused situation.
Yeah, I think the whole aftermath of the initial march to the police department is something separate. And I think it's something that a lot of people want to confuse and conflate as being the same thing. And they're definitely not.
Right. And I'm not even clear with what happened at Walmart.
Don't know the details of it either. Depending on who you ask, you know, Antifa planned to destroy all establishments in Roanoke because they're anarchist.
Right.
When really, I mean, I think probably the most likely scenario is that there was a bunch of people who wanted to be part of what happened downtown and were upset about downtown, or were just people from outside the area.
Were they even the same people?
No. I would say by and large, most of them absolutely were not. And definitely by the time they got to Sheets and other places, it was definitely not the same people at all. And I think my takeaway from what happened here in Roanoke, and just really if we want to just keep going from micro to macro in the country in general, is that there you see where someone again like Jordan or Xavier or Bernadette provided, you know, excellent messaging, excellent call to action, you know, things for people to be organized behind and to get behind. And I also like, you know, I think I like Police Chief Roman. I don't think he handled that situation as well as he could, but at the same time, they didn't know what it was going to turn into. Right.
Chief Jones would have been out there complaining about rap music. Okay.
No, so for sure. Like,
and women drinking too much.
Yeah.
Right.
So
could it have been handled?
To Roman for not doing that.
and could it have been handled better? Sure. Everything could have. This entire, you know, the sad state of everything of where it's at right now is that all of this could have been avoidable from, you know, George Floyd's death down to, you know, just, I don't know, the fair and equal treatment of people to be alive. But again, what you see and on a very small level with Chief Roman is there's some confusion and I wouldn't say that his was a lack of leadership, but then when things start getting, when protests turn into these other things that people try to use to discredit things, it's just, again, you're lacking that leadership like you had with the Black Lives Matter, you know, march. And, you know, I think that stops. It should stop with our president, but doesn't. It's, you know, it's also that at some points the people that are enabling him. But I think a lot of simple reform, a lot of simple rules and procedures, and a lot of just even heads and good leadership could prevent, I think, all of these kind of infractions that people keep having with the police, because the police are just like, a lot of them assume they're the authority, are acting out of fear or acting out of anger or whatever else, and taking a situation to where they should be serving and protecting people and making those situations even more inflammatory. And they're also, again, giving credence to do so by leaders like Donald Trump, who are saying, you start looting, we start shooting, you know, which is just basically a way to say, hey, listen, we know that arson, larceny, petty larceny, trespassing, breaking and entering, any of these things aren't punishable by death. You know what, police? Right. They should be, because looters. Mm-hmm. Everyone who's got a problem right now is a looter. And so things go from peaceful protest and get basically gasoline poured on them by this, again, terrible leadership, fear, and police not knowing what to do in these situations and not being trained for these situations. And I think, again, what totally exasperates that, though, is then they're giving tactical and military gear.
Right. So when we say they're not trained for these situations, they are trained, and they're following their training. Right?
I mean, I don't know.
We spent years training them to deal with things, you know, in this way.
I agree for some, for sure. And I think that problem is so multifaceted and complicated. You know, I got a text from growing up. My friend had a son when she was very young, and so we all sort of were around in this kid's formative years. And he was out on Tuesday walking around Austin, filming what was going on, not throwing rocks, not spitting on police, not even anywhere that he shouldn't have been. And a police officer just saw him with his cell phone filming, shot him in the stomach with a rubber bullet. And when he fell on the ground to put his hands on the ground and lay down, the same cop shot him again in the back.
My God.
And so while some of them, like you said, are trained to do this, I don't think anyone's trained to do that. Right. I don't think that's part of any kind of protocol. I don't think that's, and that cop is probably an outlier, right?
I know, but you got so many, I mean, if you put 100 people on the streets with rubber bullets and then, you know, you like one outlier caused a lot of damage, like, you know, absolutely. One outlier and somebody's, you know, shot. So, you know, when you put 100,000 cops on the street, like, and so it multiple, you know, with rubber bullets and tell people, you know, and tell them to be, you know, watch out for whatever, be ready. Give up. I mean, why, like, what's the use of force protocol with rubber bullets?
Well, and then I think that's the issue is that they're trained how to use non-lethal measures, and they're trained how to use discretion when it comes to using a firearm, but they're not trained in how to de-escalate situations.
Right.
They're not trained and they're not given the proper training or even support. And I was thinking long and hard about this because again, you don't want to blanket stereotype all police in the same way that people try to blanket stereotype all protesters and whatever else. And I was trying to come up with reasons for this. And again, I think it boils down to you got a lot of bad people doing a noble job for the wrong reasons. And that's because of lack of support. That's because it's become this sort of fraternal organization that needs each other for support because they don't have the right training. They don't have the right support. And they're trained, what they are trained in is the wrong things. And that's how we get to where we're at now. And that's how you get to keep officers on, like the guy who killed George Floyd. You know what I mean? It's officers get fired and rehired because there's no protocol for those things. There's no real good reform that's ever happened within the police department. And so, again, I don't know how to fix those things. And I don't know which facet you start with, because again, it starts with leadership, you know, top down.
Right.
But also, you know, people are accountable for their actions too. And then,
the problem is cops aren't. Cops aren't accountable for their actions at all. Right. Does anybody think that the guy who pepper sprayed, you know, a guy with his hands in the air in Roanoke is going to get in trouble? I don't hear anything from our leaders indicating that that cop's going to get in trouble. You know, does anybody think that the guy who decided to pepperball, you know, Lewis is going to get in trouble? Like, is there any indication that anybody downtown was doing anything? Like, I've in the aftermath, I've heard nothing that anybody downtown broke anything, had anything that was on them that was an indication. Like, nobody even got arrested downtown, right?
Right.
So why did police feel the need to use pepper spray and pepper balls on people who weren't doing anything? Like, what, I mean, if I go out on the street right now and I just say something that's mean about cops, or I try to film a cop, are they gonna pepper spray me? Like, what's the use of force protocol? Like, what gives them permission? You know, does having quote unquote, you know, I listened to the press conference yesterday, and you know, and the excuses used were, one, that the march was an unpermitted event, right? So that the march was not permitted.
Uh-huh.
But one of my big problems is that it's unpermitted because, do you know how long in Roanoke you need to give notice in order to have a permitted event? 90 days. 90 days you need to give notice. And it's not just notice, actually. You need to give 90 days. You have to have your application in and approved, and then there needs to be 90 days.
Right.
That is the current. And I mean, I'm sorry that there's no rapid approval process. There's no way to communicate to the police that, like, you have an intention to do a march, or to let them know. And I know that events have violated this in the past.
Well, but right now you're not going to get approval either because of the whole COVID thing.
Right. But then.
Right. So there's no mechanism to have First Amendment rights right now. Like, are we really canceling the First Amendment at this time?
Well, but I think so. A couple of things with that. I think that's where community voices have to be louder and be real, like, vigilant in with the people that have been elected, whether we like them or not, reviewing these things. The police officers have, the Police Officers Bill of Rights. We need to be reviewing those things and making changes and being loud about that. One of the things, though, that, and I know that we have this both in Blacksburg and Christiansburg, is that you can't have spontaneous marches and rallies and things like that. I can only speak for what happens in Montgomery County. And those things happen a lot for whatever reason.
Right.
None of them have resulted ever in what happened in Roanoke this weekend. And I think the second that you lose trust, and I will say, you know, Chief Roman has only been here for 46 days. He has a culture that needs to be changed. Like, he hasn't had the opportunity to do that yet. And I think now is the time that we say, hey, we need our police force to reflect what our community needs and wants so that you can do your job to protect and to serve. And then we can feel like we can go to you when whatever happens. And I think those conversations have to take place. I don't think, though, yet, there has been a true open and honest dialogue at all, because I think right now everybody's in, I'm not going to say CYA mode, but they want their.
I think that's a good word. I think that's good. I think that's fair.
Well, I mean, when you want your actions justified, so saying, well, it wasn't a permitted event, well, that's trying to justify your actions. I think the police should know the community well enough to recognize what might happen. They knew who was organizing that event, and so they should have already known what the tone of it was gonna be. Based on who was organizing it, you knew the tone was not going to be outrageous. And so your response and your preparedness, or whatever you wanna call it, did not match who you know your community to be. And I take huge issue with that.
Right.
I was going to say, you know, it comes down to being part of a solution and not exasperating a problem.
Right.
And I think that's a lesson I think a lot of people should take away from this and really just any aspect of everything that's going on in the world right now or in our country, which is, you know, going to where you're needed and doing the things from groups like Black Lives Matter Roanoke. That are needed and they're useful, and not the things that reflect your opinion or your fears or any of that other stuff, unless they're warranted. Like, again, people have a distrust for the police because of actions like this. So then, what do you do to counter that? You don't pepper spray people. You know, you engage them in conversation and dialogue and all that kind of stuff. And you know, and it could have been. You know, we can cover the could have been's forever.
I know.
But again, I think listening, you know, to activist groups, listening to, you know, what people are saying and what their concerns are, would have gone an incredibly long way. And that goes for people who want to help and do things too. You know, yeah. I love the outpouring of, you know, of people's support for Black Lives Matter and all that kind of stuff. And I'm really disheartened by all the All Lives Matter people and all the people who are trying to make this about them or their business or their, you know, their own personal needs and feelings, but you know, there's a better way to do all of it. And I think we gotta hold people accountable, and we gotta do what's needed and where we're needed, instead of doing the things that are just biased, you know, opinions about ways to handle situations or ways to engage with people who are frankly really hurting and really concerned.
Mm-hmm. Right. So one of my things that I am bringing up is the difference between our threat assessment of a, you know, NAACP led, you know, Jordan Bell led, you know, Tiffany Jordan led, and Brenda Hale and Bernadette led events, versus the amount of attention and preparation for an event such as an AR-15 gathering, right?
Well, sure.
So my concern is that I track these AR-15 guys pretty close, and they manage to track me pretty close too. So the minute I say something about them and their AR-15s, like, let me tell you, they are making sure that they let me know that they hear me. And you know, we had them parading around all over downtown Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And by their own admission, these AR-15 dudes went and they took water to the police that were out there in their quote unquote riot gear. Like, where is the intelligence and concern about those guys? Like, we know that those guys have done the overwhelming amount of killing, the overwhelming amount of that the people of that ideology have been responsible for way more deaths in this country than Black Lives Matter or Antifa, you know, like that. We know how many people who subscribe to that ideology have been killed, you know, who subscribe to that ideology have become killers. And it's a lot. You know, we have the FBI and other organizations now warning about the risks of these groups, of these militia groups. Well, but for years we have not been assigning, you know, when Obama first came into office, they had a report about how these militia groups were gaining, you know, strength and power and getting more active and getting more violent. And Republicans lost their minds and shouted it all down and said that we couldn't talk about it. We just let them grow and get more aggressive. So I'm just tired of the police acting like, oh, you know, we had intel. I mean, you know, I've heard this in Roanoke. I heard this too at the press conference yesterday. Oh, we had intelligence. Where's the intelligence on my, you know, the AR-15 dudes? Where's that? Right. Well, they have a lot of criminal history amongst them too. I'll tell you that.
Well, what I think concerns me on that aspect is that you could have, I don't know how many people marched on Richmond back in January.
Oh, well, I mean, that was like a nationwide call. I mean, it was a lot. Sure. It was like 5,000, 10,000 people, yeah.
So you have a lot of people who can come out because they feel that their rights are being infringed upon. They're worried about an overreaching and tyrannical government, and in particular, a police and military state. And now it's happening, right? You see some of their fears come to life, and where are they now? You know, and I'm right. sure that
well, they're marching around giving water to police. I don't know.
Well, again, I'm sure that about this military state because it's hurting Black people, right? Like, if
yes.
their rights were being, or their so-called rights were being met with the same type of force, it would be a whole different story. But they're supportive of what's happening because it's hurting my community. It's hurting my right. people.
Absolutely.
And looking at ways to keep us in the chains that they wish that we still were in. And so there's not going to be outrage from them about what's happening because it's serving as a means to bolster them, right? Bolster right. them and hurt me. And so there will never be outrage. It's the same thing when we talk about the shooting, the killing of Philando Castile.
Castile, yeah.
The NRA should have been the first voices out there because that's what they claim to be about. But we know
that. Right. Where was their march for Philando, right?
Yeah.
Well, and this is where, you know, I think it's concerning and it saddens me in a lot of ways because even as bad as things get, you or myself or anyone, you know, naively go, well, at least we're on the same page about this. And I think a lot of those people are on the same page and worried about police overreach. I've seen a lot of posts from people who I otherwise would have thought would post about these things, about the police being held accountable for George Floyd's death. But by and large, though, you know, when you have guys who are open carrying, defending Confederate monuments while citizens are being pepper sprayed because of curfews, or arrested because of curfews, or facing a lot of just frankly excessive force by the police in Richmond, and they're out there going, well, the Confederate statues, that's what really needs our help and attention right now. It's like, well, yeah, well then that whole thing was a sham. And I don't think that again, every, you know, Second Amendment libertarian, whatever person is like that, but by and large, it feels that way.
Well, I think enough of them are, right?
Right. And I think that the only way we get to a place where we're all treated equally and we all get the same liberties under, you know, the banner of the Constitution or whatever, you know, of America or whatever else people want to parade around sometimes, is if we're making sure that everyone has those liberties and freedoms and protections from the government or the law or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's not what you see. And again, it goes back to that kind of leadership thing. I mean, you have the president of the United States tear gassing a group of protesters so he can have a photo op in front of a church. Who's the pastor? Who the pastor recently just got tear gassed so that the president could do a pandering evangelical photo op in front of it. And the real problem again is with people either putting up or shutting up. You know, if you're not going to be part of the solution, then quit making it a worse problem. Quit being a Jerry Falwell. Right. Quit excusing. And I think some religious leaders are very vocal and good about this, but not enough. You know, yeah. If an evangelical photo op is supposed to make you feel better in these times, like, call the president out on those things. You know, be part of the things that are needed and that are helpful, and quit trying to be like, well, what about these people that were just defending their business? And what about Antifa and all this stuff? Like, guys, like, I don't know how unequivocal the FBI or how more clear the FBI can be about, well, we have zero evidence supporting that there's this big Antifa, like, you know, movement under this. You know, in fact, what we're showing is that groups from Oregon are coming down to California to make it look like these riots are caused by protest groups. We have, you know, unequivocal evidence that, like, you know, oh, look, a police officer was the one who actually smashed that window. And
well, do we have unequivocal evidence? I don't know.
I don't know. But my point is it's mixed and unclear about, yes, rather than focusing on that, which is something, it's almost opinion based and we're never going to be able to change, rather than in putting stock into boogeyman concepts. What we should be doing is we should all be on the same page about, like, this is unacceptable behavior from people who are supposed to serve and protect us. Their bottom line and their mission statement is to serve and protect. And if that's not happening, and especially if military force, if police force are being used against citizens, this is the exact scenario in which we all are on the same page about, and yet we can't get some people in our community to come to bat because they want to, it's their gun rights are more important, or, you know, some amendments to the Constitution are more important than others. Mm-hmm.
And right. I think, well, it's, so, I think it's, I mean, ridiculous. I think what we see over and over again is, you know, my fear is that, okay, we have a certain set of Second Amendment rights. You know, we brought up Philando Castile. We have a certain set of Second Amendment rights for white people. You know, we're talking about Philando Castile. We're talking about how, like, all those white guys with AR-15s in Richmond or walking around here are treated. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have a certain set of Second Amendment rights for those white guys. And then we have a certain set of Second Amendment rights for black citizens. Mm-hmm. What? No. Right. Like, we need to have one set. And then my fear is, once again, we see that this is spread to the First Amendment, where there's one set of First Amendment rights for, you know, groups that are overwhelmingly white. Like, we even see it in the responses to the groups who are saying the exact same things, right? The groups up in Blacksburg didn't get pepper sprayed. Well, they were overwhelmingly white. Like, we see again and again that the blacker the crowd that shows up
to an event, the more likely they are to be met with this, you know, to be met with pepper spray, to be met with tear gas. And like, that's not to say that, you know, some white people aren't also getting tear gas, that some white people aren't also getting rubber bullets. But what we're seeing is that it's like the overwhelmingly white crowd that shows up never gets met with that amount of force. So do we have one First Amendment for white people and it's in a separate level of First Amendment for yeah. our blacks, you know, for a demonstration that's overwhelmingly led by black citizens? I mean, that's just chilling. If that, I mean, that is what I'm seeing. Like, you know, I don't know how else to describe it. Like, and then that's just beyond, sorry, my kids. So I'm just beyond, I think it's so revealing and so scary, but you know, so we, I think, I don't know if we're going to do the smooth transition, but the, Richmond and the Confederate monuments have been brought up. I don't know if we want to talk about, if Karen wants to transition us over.
No, we can transition over. And I think it all actually goes hand in hand because, we know why these monuments were erected. And so today, which is Wednesday, Governor Northam announced that they would be taking down the Robert E. Lee statue. They already have a mandate really for all of the, for localities to start to make decisions about taking down Confederate statues. And one of the things that I think people forget is that Robert E. Lee was against such monuments, right? So one, he was against those, but two, they all started to be erected around the 1920s as a way to instill fear, right? A way to keep people, and I say people, black people, in this same state that they were pre-Reconstruction. And to make sure that those things would happen. So let's talk about that a little bit. I know the mayor, LeVar Stoney, is going to be introducing some mandates and legislation through city through their city council to take some further action. But what do we do? What does it mean for these statues to be taken down? What do you guys think?
The amount of change that we have seen in just a few short years to me is amazing, you know, in terms of people really evolving on this and shout out to all the people who started this when this was a lonely pursuit, you know, shout out to, you know, I believe her name is Zaya Bryant. Am I getting her name right? In Charlottesville? Is that correct? Is that her name? I don't know if I'm getting the first name exactly right, yeah. But, I know our last name is Bryant. Yeah. So shout out to her for, you know, starting the petition. You know, I think there was somebody on Charlottesville City Council who kind of like brought up the issue of getting rid of the statue there in the first place. And, you know, Zaya started a petition about it and really kicked off and gave them, you know, I think the woman who kind of first brought it up was a white lady, and Zaya really brought, you know, as a young person in Charlottesville, really brought the, you know, she brought the historical context and the fire of a and passion of a young person to the issue, and really set it off. You know, really lit the, you know, took a little tiny match and took it to, you know, she was the one who brought all the kindling to make a fire. Right. Like, you know, there was a match that was lit, but a match easily goes out if there's no kindling. So, you know, I just want to shout out to her that this is an enormous amount of change. I mean, she was in high school when she did that, and she's, I think, a first year at UVA now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe a second year. And so, you know, the fact that we are getting such change in 4 years to me is enormous, but it also speaks to the amount, you know, even the amount of change we've seen in the last week, you know, from LeVar Stoney going from, oh, well, yeah, maybe we should make, you know, is this or that right for Richmond? Oh, well, maybe we got to talk about it for like 10 more years before we can decide. Right. Mm-hmm. So he goes from that to, you know, oh, hey, a group of people have shown me that they are committed to making these monuments, one, an eyesore, and two, just like a continuous issue until I deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we see the commitment of people to frankly, you know, people talk over and over, peaceful protest, peaceful protest. Well, you know, I'm sorry, I'm committed to a good bit of civil disobedience. Like, don't talk to me about peaceful protest. Talk to me about civil disobedience that really changes the way we see things and frame things, because civil disobedience changes the world, you know? Yeah. Civil disobedience is revealing, right? So disobeying and what I would call an unlawful or an immoral immoral order is what really changes things. Absolutely. And, you know, it's not always doing it the exact way you're told to do it that changes things.
Right.
So that, you know, I see those monuments covered in graffiti, and it's like the extremely rich people who live in that neighborhood, you know, maybe they would have been like, oh, well, we like the statues, if they had not become an eyesore, right? Or some of them would be. Yeah. But, like, let's face it, they're an eyesore now.
Yeah.
So, well, like, let's have something nice to look at.
Well, I think it goes back to some, you know, a very basic understanding of those things, is that they belong in a museum.
Absolutely.
And I think now more than ever, you know, and I put up a thing about the monuments being taken down on social media, and I got a lot of really interesting and good responses to it, which was, you know, they belong in a museum now and the state that they're in. And the way that they look now, because again, I think God, that's yes. as historical as on some level as you know, the Confederacy at one point being part of the United States. But at the end of the day, they're participation trophies, and they were put there by a group of people who disagreed with desegregation. And so, I mean, we all know what they are. You know, and another really good friend of mine who I think he's right about this, you know, was just saying that it's just, you know, it's performance on the part of some legislators, though, because it's patting yourself on the back or finally getting around to a thing, to your point, Catherine, you know, to a thing that people have been asking for forever, that is common sense, that shouldn't have been a consideration or a thought, right? Like, those statues should have never stayed up past a certain point, even if we, as a state, allowed them to happen. So finally now doing the right thing, I don't know if you get a pat on the back for it, because in some sense it is performance, and in some sense it is a step in the right direction, but in terms of the steps we need to be making right now, it could have been one of the last steps, or it could have been part of a more comprehensive approach, instead of just being like, oh yeah, guys, and we're going to do this too, so don't worry about
it. So that. Here's the thing where elections and your vote and understanding how all these things work matter, because, you know, they're legislation to protect these statues, or they couldn't be moved, they couldn't be taken down. We had to wait probably till a time such as this to have the right people in office to recognize that we need to make those really significant changes. In this past session, you know, there's several pieces of legislation that had to be changed because they still had a lot of the segregationist, racist rhetoric laws on the books still from like the 1920s. It's taken that long to remove things. And I'm sure if we examine things in our localities, we would find the same thing. And so when the law is put in place to protect the bad, we have to be real diligent in making sure we're able to change those laws. And that starts not just with those voting, but the people that are running. Like, how do we groom and y'all should know, I've been thinking about this one for like quite some time, but how do we groom and find better candidates, people to run that reflect all of our values and not just a few, so that where we need to make the changes to tear down the walls of systemic racism, how do we do that? And how do we do that with one voice? And right now we got too many voices out here. Like, nobody on 100% the same page, but we have to keep working at that. But we have laws in place that keep these things going, and it's 2020. It's crazy.
Right.
Well, yeah, and I'm not cheating on you guys, but I do sit and speak on a few other podcasts. And one of them, I know, I'm sorry. None of them are as great as this one.
Aren't you going to be on all the podcasts, Will? Isn't that the goal?
It's my dream to be a guest on every single podcast. But the one of the positive things that was getting tossed around when I was speaking with one of my friends, Nick, who is a he was a Green Beret and had a lot of really active leadership roles within the Army, and especially in regards to the shift in, we go in and we just shoot the place up and we tell them to behave, you know, if we don't like what they're doing and they're quote unquote terrorists, to like, we have to engage with people and we have to meet them at where they are. And there's no way any of these wars will ever end unless we do that. One of his things is like, you know, one of the world, the United States, whatever, is ripe right now for a champion, mm-hmm. for someone, be it politician, be it activist, be it whoever, to step forth and provide the kind of leadership and the rational guidance that everyone needs to your point, Karen, to be there for all people and not just who's giving you the most money, not who's the old guard, not who's the biggest industry, but to do the thing that is most comprehensive and that is right for all of the people that state, that city, whatever else represents. Mm-hmm. And to your point, I'm really hoping that out of this comes someone who is willing to be like, I was always on the right side of this. I'm still on the right side of this. I'm still fighting hard.
Mm-hmm. So it's funny because I don't believe in any of that. Like, I believe any old like person who will vaguely listen to the correct side of things will work, will do in power. Right. And then sure. I believe that the change is produced by those people willing to bring about the civil disobedience and the pressure, right? Because like LBJ did not do stuff because, you know, LBJ said, like, LBJ was, you know, if you listen to his phone recordings, he was like, you got to make me do it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just do it. You got to make me.
Right.
Like,
right.
He was very honest about power and the way power works. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, I may be sympathetic to you, but like, if you don't show me that that's the only, like, you, the way you have to deal with these leaders is they, you know, if they're not set in that direction, it doesn't matter. There's no way, you know, at this point in time, there's no way you can turn them in that direction. Mm-hmm. But like, if the leader is set generally in that direction and has nodded generally to that direction, what you have to do is almost like what the police do to protesters, all right? Which is you have to cut off every path,
right?
Except for that path, right? Yeah, you have to block every single avenue except for the path that you want them to go down. And you have to be very clear. You're not coming this way. No, no. We're not going down the path. We're not going down the path of interminable conversation and not actually changing anything. That's not the path we're going down. You have to create that pressure. You have to make that pot boil. And if you don't do that, even if they're set in the right direction, even if they nod to the right things and say the right things, they just won't do it. Like, that's just not how politicians, people who run for office, just never do the right thing unless you boil that pot and you make them.
Well, not always, but again, I don't think you can.
They never do it.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think Sam Rasul's out doing like the right thing right now. I think there's people who do the right thing regardless.
I don't know. I boiled Sam a time or two, so I don't know about
sure.
that.
Sure. Nobody's perfect, right?
I mean, everybody's human and fallible, but our faces.
Yeah.
But go ahead, sorry.
Everybody's human and fallible.
Yeah.
But I think part of the problem, you know, and this to your point, Catherine, is that, you know, we have come to expect a lot of leaders and a lot of people in power to do the right things and represent us, and we don't demand it. And I think we come to hope for the best, and we don't feel empowered, and we feel beholden to the agendas of people, again, who don't represent us.
Yeah.
And to Karen's point, those are the people you got to replace. You got to vote them out.
Oh, yeah.
You got to get new and better leadership in there. I don't know, because I'm torn, because again, there are a lot of old guard bad people, but there are a lot of potential for new guard, and there is a lot of new guard that is doing better and will do better.
Oh yeah. No doubt about that.
But I think the underlying thing is the world needs to remind politicians, you know, any government organization, is that they're beholden to us and we are not beholden to them.
Right.
And I think this plays into that kind of mentality about, you know, where you get into All Lives Matter and all that kind of crap, where people are like, well, you justify the killing of police and looters and all this stuff, beating up police. I'm like, no, but the deal is, you know, the police signed up for this. You know, the line of fire is a real thing, and it's a noble profession if done correctly and done in the right way. But the problem is some people signed up and to put themselves in danger in exchange for a paycheck, in exchange for the things that their job entails, and the other people are just citizens. Uh-huh. And so, yes, all loss to life is a terrible and sad thing. But the deal is some people, that is part of their job and that is part of what they were willing to do to uphold their job or to do whatever aspect of their job they have. And so it's the same way again with politicians. They don't need to be, we shouldn't have to corral them into doing what we want them to do. They should do what we want because they're supposed to represent us. Right. And until we get that shift happening, and hopefully again, that's one of those things that'll hopefully come out of all this, is that do the right thing because it's the right thing, not because it's the most advantageous thing for your political career, not because it's a good photo op for evangelicals, not because it's going to make you the most money, not because it's going to help you leapfrog your career or whatever. Do the right thing from the start, because again, yeah, people will eventually corral you in the right way. We all get to pat people on the back for doing something you should have done all along. But you should have done it all along because this is what is best for the citizens that you represent. And this is their wants and needs. And that just, I just don't always see that happening. And the majority of times we don't see that happening.
Yeah. Well, when AOC is president, we can find out whether or not, you know, we have to force her to do things.
Sure.
But it's speaking of forcing people to do things. You think that the hands will be tipped in Roanoke in terms of Confederate monuments? What's the tipping point here?
I don't know. I think that is going to be an interesting conversation. I think just like in Montgomery County, I think it'll be an interesting conversation to have. To see what happens. I don't know.
Roanoke City, yeah, I think it's going to be very different from the county. It's going to be very different from Bedford. It's going to be very different from Lynchburg.
True. Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, this area is going to be, it's going to be kind of crazy. But mm-hmm. I think one of the things that is encouraging about the removal of statues like that and the just being forward about who we are and not who we were, is that getting rid of statues of Robert E. Lee, getting rid of Confederate monuments and things like that. It's going to be an uphill battle, but it is also the birthing pangs of a better and more progressive society. Okay. You know, I think those things belong in a museum. I don't think, you know, and maybe it's just the kid who went to art school and knowing what it takes to like, make anything out of bronze or whatever you end up making statues out of. Whenever, you know, even when I was watching them like topple Iraq and the USSR and these places with had extremely problematic propaganda, you know, leaders and statues that represented them, I was like, oh, but that was just such a so well made.
craftsmanship.
So you can always ask for a donation.
So yeah, get them in a museum. And again, I think you should leave them with all the graffiti and everything all over them.
Oh yeah. Just like chunks of the wall, right? Chunks of the Berlin Wall graffitied are so valuable now, you know, they're in museums, right?
Yeah.
So is Trump's fence that he's putting around the White House, where we gonna put that, are we going to graffiti that up and put that in a museum? I don't know.
But again, I do think it is whatever trials and tribulations that happen as a result of removing these statues and monuments are again just the process of getting to a better place where again we probably should have been at it anyways.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys, this has been good conversation today and one that I know we're going to continue because what's happening nationally is like literally trickling down in our backyards, right?
Yep.
What we do locally will trickle up, you know,
right.
It's important that we all engage in the conversations and the good work and the things that we need to do to kind of institute change that is much, much needed. But, you know, as we go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, and if there's any, you know, if there's anybody who has a passion for, you know, reforming the justice system, who's a lawyer, you know, maybe wants to reach out to us either in Montgomery County or Roanoke to run for a Commonwealth attorney, you just go ahead. Like, right. Feel free to reach out to the podcast. We'd be happy to have you on.
Absolutely. But as we kind of think about, you know, this week coming up, I don't know. What you guys looking forward to? Mm-hmm. Anything good?
I'm looking forward to seeing the conversations that come out and is there any accountability for the failures downtown in terms of the failures of intelligence? Like, if your intelligence told you that downtown was going to be violent and you met that with a level of force that was completely, most people who were in attendance thought was completely, you know, nobody got violent downtown, period. Even after they got their you know, pepper sprayed, right? Nobody got violent. So if you meet people who are marching with what, you know, I'm sorry, pepper spray is assault, with assault, mm-hmm. and they don't fight back, that's a pretty good indication that you had an intelligence failure, right? Sure. That whatever happened, your intelligence was no good. Like, your intelligence that justified that response was no good. Mm-hmm. So what's the accountability for that? What's the accountability for the people who made the decisions? You know, who authorized pepper spray? And what's the accountability for the failure to communicate? That's what I'll be watching for this next week. And I'll be communicating with, and then I'll also be watching our local militia to see what they think they're up to.
Well.
Oh, I don't know. I'm looking forward to some of the progress I see around cities and people being more proactive and local and state governments. To create an issue reform and change within their communities. I think the one good thing that we have seen from all this is that you can't rely on the president for sure. But you can create a lot of change locally, mm-hmm. that I think people don't feel like they have the power or the wherewithal to do. When the reality is, like, you can get a lot more done quicker and more efficiently and actually get a lot of better change on a state and local level than you can on the big one. That's not to say don't vote in November. That's not to say that you know, federal politics don't matter. Mm-hmm. But I mean, where are our federal politicians right now? Where is the president with some levity and some help with this? Where are the people who are trying to keep the big picture intact when we need them? And I don't think you see a lot of that. I'm encouraged by the people locally who have kind of stepped up in that kind of vacuum and void, and who are actually addressing the things in this nation that need to be addressed versus the divisive things, like, you know, the same old stuff, which is like, you know, abortion or gun rights or the things that, you know, affect actually very small percentages of us, which are important issues, but are often used to divide us versus, I don't know, systemic racism or, police oversight or police reform, those kind of things, which actually affect all of us in a much more direct and often harmful way. Mm-hmm. So look forward to that. I'm also a little fearful about the pandemic aspect of everything that's been going on, and I'm glad and I'm encouraged seeing that people are being safe at protests. That, yes. Again, people like Sam or Robert are handing out masks at rallies, because I have to feel at some level, when COVID disproportionately affects, you know, low income communities, people of color. That the chuckle silver lining for a bunch of people who don't like what's going on, or, you know, whether they're part of the grand old party or whoever else, you know, is knowing that that we, through people coughing because of tear gas or pepper spray or whatever, that there's a real spread of mm-hmm. of potential COVID then. So I'm sort of, I'm both encouraged again by the people who are being safe, and I'm also I'm a little fearful of what's going to be happening a week, you know, 3 weeks from now, with just all that. So we'll see.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree with you, Will. I think one of the things that has been heartening is everywhere I've been, people are protesting and they got their mask on, which yep. is good. I mean, that's a real positive, but we do also know that we are still fighting this virus, and people really need to be fully aware of that, especially as we're entering phase two of the opening of Virginia. We need to think about that. So for this week, a lot of things really that I'm looking forward to is some continued planning. I think, and you guys know, because I talk about this all the time, you know, my advocacy is with the NAACP, and so really starting to put together strategies, because if you're protesting and there's nothing going to come of it, then you're just protesting. And so making sure that we're on kind of one accord and making some significant changes in our communities. And so this week and probably the next several weeks will be full of planning for me. And so we should all be part of the efforts to make significant changes in our communities. So, well, I thank you, John.
You know, and thank you. Well, yeah. And thank you, Karen, for all your hard work behind the scenes too. Could you also, you know, just being boots on the ground, let people know what are some of the things they can do to help and be, you know, supportive if they're not out, you know, protesting, if they're not, you know, I mean, because again, sharing your thoughts and concerns on social media and with family members and all that stuff is helpful. But what are some, do you have some kind of more direct actions that people can do to help?
Absolutely. And so, first of all, join your local branch of the NAACP. But no, honestly, things that we are and that are being pushed forward is to, in looking at our police departments, we want to make sure that our police reflect our communities. And that means the diversity of being from our community, learning our communities. One of the things that we'll be looking at and putting forward are civilian review boards with subpoena power. That's a mandate from national and something that we'll be looking at doing, and how to institute and starting those really hard conversations, because those are really important to have. Starting to look at our Commonwealth's attorneys, and even if your law enforcement is doing good work, and I brag on what's happening in Montgomery County because I know that they've been putting in the hard work for a while, but having that, that's only one piece of it. We also have to make sure that officers are prosecuted in the ways that they should be, and that starts with our Commonwealth's attorneys, but then also looking at the making sure that things like chokeholds and knee holds and all of those things are taking out of what can be done. And so really paying attention to those things and getting involved with the groups that are looking forward to making those types of changes. And those are just a few of the things, and we'll definitely be sharing more through our Facebook page on Our Voices, Our Community, of how to be involved, what to do, and then understanding the ways in which systemic racism affects everyone's lives, not just mine, because if it hurts me, then it hurts you too. And what we want is a more fair and equitable society. And those are the things that we have to work towards in education, in jobs, in criminal justice reform, healthcare, all of those things. And it takes all of us to understand and be ready and willing to do the hard work. So yeah, thank you for letting me give my spiel, Will. That was good.
Of course.
That was good. Well, thank you all for listening to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors Virginia Magazine. You can listen to us each Sunday at 3 p.m. on Radio Free Roanoke, WROE 95.7. And if you liked what you heard today, leave us a review. Also, be sure to like Our Voices, Our Community on Facebook. Thank you all, and we will see you, talk to you, hear you, listen to you next week. Have a good one.